This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Once again, before we get started, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. And you can also listen to this podcast on Seminole Sports Radio from VSporto. And listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app, available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And of course, if you've been enjoying this podcast, you can also rate us on iTunes, tell a friend. We're going to be ramping up here a little bit more as we get into spring practice. We hear a little bit more of what's going on. We're still really in the silly season. We're still in that part of the year where there's not a whole lot to talk about just yet. There's going to be plenty to talk about once we get into the spring and we start getting reports about what's going on and seeing a little bit more of what's actually happening. Going to be plenty to talk about then. Going to be a lot to talk about in the off season once we've got some spring data to break down, but really just not much to deal with aside from a few things that have come out of fourth quarter drills. And we're going to cover a few things today. First segment, we're going to talk about a probable position change, actually a position change that's already happened, and how that change projects. Basically, we're going to look at what's going on there. We're also going to talk a little bit about Florida State basketball toward the end of the podcast, as well as the Florida State basketball team has been eliminated from the ACC tournament. We're going to talk about the future, look a little bit at next year, and just where things stand at that point. So let's get to it. The first thing is looking at a position change that we have basically been informed has happened. When I heard rumblings that there was any possibility of this, I poo-pooed them. Didn't think it was possible, but it looks like Rick Leonard, the backup defensive end, he's backing up DeMarcus Walker, who played extremely well actually late last year. The second half of the year he played very well, looked very good, particularly against Florida and Houston, came in and made some tackles for a loss and really contributed. This is a guy who now is going to be is going to be an offensive tackle. Apparently he went and, you know, Rick Trickett has wanted him at offensive tackle since he signed years ago. I mean, Trickett likes having that kind of athlete with that kind of length and that kind of ability to put on bulk, but particularly those feet with that length. He loves that kind of player and covets those guys sometimes pretty much all the time when they sign. And it's just a matter of whether or not, the player wants to move, and whether or not the defensive coaching staff is really willing to lose that guy. But ultimately they leave it up to the player. And this is a move that surprised me that I did not see coming. Last year I wouldn't have been very surprised by this. I mean, Leonard has a 6'7" frame, can carry a lot of weight really easily, and moves so fluidly and bends well that you're looking at a guy that has a very high ceiling at the offensive tackle position. But I just thought this was basically off the table now that he was going into his junior year. It was kind of late in the process, and I just didn't expect to see this at this point. And I'll be honest, when I first heard about it, I really hated this move. It's like, man, you're taking a guy that really the light bulb came on for this guy late last year. Backing up DeMarcus Walker, he really looked good. Looked excellent. Looked like a player who you could rely on to be maybe even an all ACC type level player at that end position, backing up DeMarcus Walker. Now, that's not to say he would have made all ACC, but a guy that could play at that level and take away that many snaps and share that many snaps with a guy like Walker and be able to come in and take a lot of the abuse that happens, particularly against on running downs at that position. So I really was surprised to move him then to an offensive line, spot where the offensive line right now, even with before this, was carrying 19 players. Now, they're likely going to be losing one to a medical DQ or transfer. That puts them down to 18. Then again, 19 with Rick Leonard. It just seemed like, you know, moving a guy from a position where he was starting to come on and where there's not as much seeming depth to a position where there seems to be more depth. But the more I've thought about it, the more I've looked at it, the more I kind of get it. And the more I realize that, you know, there may be, again, some method to the madness here. And quite honestly, Florida State's coaching staff has earned a lot of of trust in terms of when they do move guys from one side of the ball to the other. It rarely it has not turned out badly as a rule. The one guy who moved and then wound up moving back was Giorgio Newberry, who actually we may wind up seeing something like that with Rick Leonard. It's possible that he moves to tackle and it doesn't quite work out, so then he moves back across the ball. But this is an opportunity for him to potentially get on the field as a starter at that right tackle position. He's already up to almost 290 pounds. He needs another 10 to 15 pounds to really be where he needs to be at that right tackle position. But, you know, he's got a chance to potentially start if he comes on and really ultimately takes to this position change. He'll have a chance because that right tackle position is so wide open and so available given some of the other news that came out of fourth quarter drills. And of course, Newberry, you know, moved to tight end, not to linebacker, and he did contribute in the year that he was there and then moved back to defensive end and was able to make a splash enough to get invited to the combine this last year. So, but again, given some of the other news, this makes a little bit more sense with Chad Mavetti having the cardiac problem that it was revealed he's been having. And, you know, it's not just the cardiac problem, the fact that we don't know when or if he's going to be able to return back to this roster. I mean, that's a possible medical DQ if they don't get this under control. But even if he does return, even if he does get back, you're talking about a guy who already was having issues being a bit overweight and not being in the best shape. What kind of shape is he going to be in if he comes back? So you can't rely on Chad Mavetti being there at the right tackle position. So that brings you back to Derek Kelly, who played well at that position last year when he was there, but he's coming off a knee injury that's going to cost him the spring. So you don't really know what you got there. Plus, they really like Derek Kelly more at the guard position than they do at the tackle position. Even though he can play tackle, he's a better guard. Not an ideal tackle. So then you've got that. Abdul Bello, who is, you know, another backup and a very high talent at the tackle position, also out with a knee injury that's going to cost in the spring. So that's three guys that you could plug in there. By that point now, you're to Brock Rubel and Ethan Frith. And I think this move shows sort of where they think they are in terms of Frith and Rubel, that they're willing to move Leonard over in the hopes that he can be a better player at that position than what they have in Frith and Rubel. So, you know, essentially they're hoping that he can turn out to be a better fit, a better prospect at that spot than one of those guys. And the other thing is that this allows them to have 10 reliable, really 11 guys, if you count Andrew Buscelli, the early enrollee. You got 11 guys that are healthy then, 11 scholarship guys on the offensive line that are healthy for the spring. And odds are you're going to get guys missing days here and there because of getting banged up or this and that. And Buscelli had his hand wrapped during fourth quarter drills as it was. So, you know, we don't know how healthy he's going to be, but this gives you two scholarship lines basically to work with during the spring. So that does make some sense. And, you know, honestly, if Leonard, I mean, given his natural foot speed and foot quickness and his bend, if he's able to work out as a high ceiling player here and win the starting job, then you've gotten a lot better at that right tackle position, which is probably the biggest question mark on this offensive line coming into the 2016 season. You know, you feel comfortable at left tackle with Roderick Johnson. Kareem R. is established at that left guard position. And then you've got Eberle, who's probably going to be the center, but, you know, you're going to have some competition, some pushing for who's going to win that center position, whether Cole Minshew or Corey Martinez. You know, you're going to get some competition there at that center position, but either way, that should be okay. And then you got Wilson Bell, who is at that right guard position, also going to be pushed again by Cole Minshew, Derek Kelly. So there's some options at those other four spots that they feel comfortable with. But the right tackle position, you still have some question marks, particularly with Mebetti being a potential casualty here. And even if he's not a full casualty, a DQ, you have to worry about what kind of shape and what kind of player he's going to be when he does return or if he returns. So that's where that makes sense in terms of the numbers on the offensive side. Then you look at the defensive side. And initially, you know, I'm going, man, you know, you take the defensive end position with DeMarcus Walker as the starter, and then when Leonard was there as the backup, I felt as good about that spot as just about any on the defense, because you've got two guys that can play at a very high level, that had shown that they could play at a high level. And now all of a sudden you go to from having some real depth that you can trust to maybe you're not as comfortable there. But here's the thing, is that we've heard really good reports. I mean, the coaching staff really likes Adam Torres, who, you know, had been kind of a forgotten man. He's been kind of a forgotten player from his class. You're looking at a guy that is a redshirt sophomore and really hasn't sniffed the field at all. Whereas, you know, other players in that class who came in as defensive tackles, I mean, you look at the other guys, DeMarcus Christmas, Derek Nnadi, Arthur Jones, Arthur Williams and Fred Jones, those five defensive tackles have all seen the field. But Torres has not. And so there's been the sense that, you know, and he battled injury a little bit early, but there's been the sense that, you know, Torres was just really not going to work out at that, you know, at the position. And, you know, there was some sense maybe he would wind up a casualty. But what they've done is he's gotten a little bit lighter. He's down to about 280 pounds, and they've moved him. And this happened during the season. I mean, he was working at the strong side defensive end position with Brad Lawing last year during the season, late in the year. And they really like him there. They like him a lot at that strong side defensive end position. So he's not really even a true defensive tackle at that point. This is where this kind of blurs just a little bit in terms of how Florida State is defining or how to define these positions and think about the depth chart just a little bit. Because really the way that Florida State played that strong side defensive end position last year, they were treating it almost as a 3-4 defensive end, which is kind of a hybrid defensive tackle, which is part of why DeMarcus Walker had such a successful season. Is really DeMarcus Walker to me has always been kind of a tweener, a little bit more of a 3 technique kind of guy, or and a 5 technique kind of guy than a true defensive end. And putting him at a defensive end position where he's, you know, initially he was playing basically a 3-4 outside linebacker at one point, and I just felt like that was just a stretch. He just didn't have the ability to move sideways that you expect from one of those guys. But he's a guy that is a load when he's moving forward and really works well when he has his hand down and he's just told to go and to go forward. He's got a lot of strength. He's got some explosiveness and can do a lot in that kind of scenario. And they asked him to do that. We talked about that on this podcast before, that they asked him to do that rather than what he'd been asked to do before. And it really suited his strengths a lot more. They asked him to do his strengths and not his weaknesses much more. So that's the thing, is that that's the big defensive end position. I mean, it's kind of a hybrid defensive end, defensive tackle position in this defense, which is kind of a hybrid 4-3-3-4, where you have two legit defensive tackles, your nose and your, say, 3 technique or whatever you want to call that other defensive tackle. So you've got Derek Nnadi, say, on the nose, and then you have the other defensive tackles, DeMarcus Christmas, who on the outside of him, you're going to have the Buck linebacker or the Buck defensive end that's just a rush end. That's Josh Sweat and those guys. And then you've got on the other side of that, you've got the big defensive end, which is kind of like another tackle, but just a little bit lighter, a guy that you can play on the edge, but you're generally going to have edge support outside him. So that's where you've got your star position on the outside of that guy that really is responsible more for the edge. So in a bigger personnel package, that's where you have a Jacob Pugh on the outside of that guy. So then it turns into basically a 50 front, and that defensive end position is really a defensive tackle kind of position in a 50 front or a 3-4 end. And or in a smaller package, you have what, you know, was Jalen Ramsey, but this year it was Jalen Ramsey a couple years ago. Last year it was Trey Marshall, and then a few others once Javion Elliott took over, that wound up being his spot. But Trey Marshall, most likely the guy there at the star position this year, that guy ends up being responsible more for that alley for the outside contain type stuff at that position. So that's what they're doing with the position. And apparently they really feel very comfortable with Adam Torres stepping in and really not being any drop off, maybe being even better than what Rick Leonard offered at that position. And that's where I'm going to be really curious to see if that actually winds up being the case in the spring. I'm going to have my eye very much on Adam Torres and my ear to the ground in terms of how he is playing at that backup position, at that end position. That's a place I'm going to be looking a lot in the spring game to just see what he looks like at that spot, because I'm really curious. There's been rumblings from inside where the name Bjorn Werner has come up a couple times when this guy's being discussed. So I think that's a bit of a stretch. I mean, Werner was a terrific player, but this is a guy that they really feel comfortable with. And if that's the case, that's why you can move a Leonard, if you feel like you have effectively just as good of a guy right behind him in Torres, and that allows him, that puts another guy right into that two deep into position to take reps. That also explains why Keith Bryant had dropped down to 280 and was, as Jimbo Fisher mentioned, he was getting some looks at that defensive end spot as well. He was going to be at that three spot, at that defensive end spot, and competing for reps as well. And he's one of the quicker, more naturally explosive defensive tackles on the roster, and that defensive tackle position is getting crowded. Again, that's an opportunity. That's a place where you could potentially give a guy like Bryant, who has talent, give a guy like Bryant a chance to earn some reps. And again, that makes some sense. And then behind them, you've got, of course, Janarius Robinson and Shavar Manuel coming in on this class, where, again, you've got some players that can play that strong side end position. So it makes some sense. Even though I really did not like this move at the beginning, I kind of get it. And it'll be interesting to see how it pans out and whether Leonard takes to that position like he very well may because of the physical tools. If he's able to get sort of get his feet wet and hit the ground running at that tackle position and use that athleticism and be a more physical option in the running game at that right tackle position, as well as being a security blanket in terms of pass protection, then you may have shored up a position that had some concern thanks to injury and other things, without much of a loss at the other position with Torres and Bryant and Janarius Robinson and Shavar Manuel in terms of your backups there. You've got some bodies that you can throw at that. So it's an interesting situation. It's something I did not anticipate, given that Leonard is going into his junior year, and I didn't expect to see a change at this point, But I definitely am in a wait and see mode, and I'm curious to see what's gonna happen with that one. So just another couple thoughts coming out of the fourth quarter drills. And by the way, this is something that I had just basically ignored, that Leonard was with the offensive line in terms of warm ups and such in fourth quarter drills. I mean, that's something that I just kind of no big deal. I mean, they're just balancing stuff. I should have paid more attention to that. But anyway, live and learn. Few thoughts from fourth quarter drills, from what I've heard, and also from some of the stuff that I was able to see. Few interesting things. I mean, again, this is just watching guys run around, and you know, watching what players look like on the hoof. First of all, Tavares McFadden is a guy that really stuck out here. He looks like he belongs. You know, it's striking how big the kid is. He's really well put together. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens at that corner spot. But McFadden certainly physically looks like he should be right in line for that. I also really liked what I saw from Ryan Green and Lewis. I mean, you've got a group of defensive backs that really look good on the hoof, and some guys that are going to be competing for jobs that in terms of their movement and in terms of what they look like physically, look like you've got some real options there. Maybe the guy that, aside from McFadden, that stuck out the most is Matthew Thomas. Matthew Thomas, just, he looks so smooth and so natural, and he's got a legit, you know, high 225, 230 area. I mean, Jimbo Fisher is saying he's between 227 and 230 in his recent weigh-ins. You're looking at a guy that brings some size to the table, and boy, does he move differently than just about any other linebacker that Florida State's had in a while. You know, if that guy's able to stay on the field, then any concerns that Florida State has about the linebacker position are pretty much going to be answered. I mean, that guy moves like you expect an elite level linebacker to move. So, going to be a lot to it'll be interesting. Again, it's important that he's able to stay on the field, but he's going to have a lot to show if he is, and certainly was one of the most impressive players on the hoof, leading drills for the linebacker group as well, in that, which shows, again, you know, you're graded on that sort of thing and you move up in those lines. Josh Brown was another guy that really stuck out. I mean, as a freshman, he's put together well. He's about 217, 218 at this point. Has the size to play already, and again, moves smoothly and moves naturally. The kind of athlete that, again, is going to be able to contribute. I think because he's so intelligent, and because of his work ethic, he's a guy that's going to be more likely to be able to contribute and get some actual reps earlier rather than later. Which is not normally the case for freshmen, but he's gonna have a chance. Be interesting to see where he is by the end of the spring, and also where he plays. There's some talk that, you know, he's gonna be at both that Sam linebacker position with Jacob Pugh, and also looking at some of the inside stuff as well, where there's a little bit more of a need for depth. So it's gonna be interesting. Mario Pender wasn't out there. I haven't really asked anyone or investigated what's going on there. I just haven't chased it, but we'll find out what was going on there at some point. He wasn't there though. But yeah, overall, I think it was interesting. I did feel like there were some offensive line and defensive line guys that I would have liked to have seen just a little bit lighter. Some of the, you know, the main guys I felt like looked really good. I mean, you look at Noddy and Christmas and Rod Johnson and some of those guys, Eberle. I mean, those guys looked good. But, you know, there were a couple other guys, some of the guys down the depth chart a little bit that need to pick it up a little bit. So, you know, that's, again, something that stuck out. George Campbell, Alden Tate, you know, both looked very good. That's the kind of setting, environment that they're going to look good in. And you know, it's going to be just a question of whether or not they get more consistent in terms of where they're going to be on the field and whether they catch the football. But, you know, again, some guys that look good. DeAndre Francois has also added probably 10 pounds since the last time I saw him. And you know, it's going to be interesting again to see what happens with him and with Malik Henry, who is, again, he's much smaller in terms of much slighter body, but thinner, but also moved well and was working hard through these drills. So, and it was interesting. You could see where Jimbo Fisher's attention was with the quarterbacks when that group was there where his eyes were. You know, he was focusing again on those two guys, which makes sense because that's really where the battle's going to be this spring. So you know, a lot to take in from that stuff. But yeah, those are my initial thoughts and reflections there. In terms of what we learned from fourth quarter drills. So a lot left. We're going to talk in the next podcast a little bit more about 2017 recruiting, which continues to trend upward. The 2017 class is going to have to turn some really good players away. Obviously, there's been some buzz since some of these guys have been at camps. Stanford Samuels III, who's most likely going to be in the Florida State class, he hasn't committed yet, but most likely going to be in there, is now getting discussion, and I think deservedly so, as arguably the top corner prospect in the country. And also, Cowan is a guy that has just been moved up to a five-star on Scout and has been moved into the top 130, I think, on 247. After what he showed down in the South Florida opening camp. I mean, they were surprised by how smoothly he moved and what he looked like in terms of being able to do some of the things that they want linebackers to do athletically at his size and with his frame. And now Florida State also leads for Beal, who's been the top defensive end on their board from the beginning. So, I mean, this is going to be a class where it looks like they're going to meet and exceed the needs that they have in the class. And they may have to turn guys down, in this class that would have been in last year's class, even in terms of quality. So, you know, but they wouldn't even have room for them in this class potentially. One other guy that really stood out in camps as well is Zaquandre White, the running back prospect who tested better than I expected, ran a 4.58 electronically, which and had a high vertical. I don't remember what it was exactly. I think it was around 40, which, you know, on those pads you have to kind of adjust down a little bit, but that's still a high 30s vertical, which shows the kind of explosiveness that you want at 6'1", or at just under 6'1", at over 6 foot, 205 pounds, and then displayed receiver skills out of the backfield. Well, this is a guy that has really shown why the coaching staff offered him early and why he's in this class. He ain't going anywhere because what he showed at this camp and how he tested out, you're looking at the best back in Florida at that point, and a guy that brings some size to the table and some versatility to the table as well that's very encouraging. So we're going to close a little bit here with we're going to close in just a moment with a little bit of discussion of Florida State basketball. Florida State was just eliminated from the ACC tournament by Virginia Tech, cutting short any hopes of being able to make a run in the ACC tournament to potentially get to get an NCAA bid, and which was not going to happen. I mean, they weren't going to beat Miami. They weren't going to be able to advance in this in enough to do. This was a flawed basketball team. But the information that we have gotten is that both Malik Beasley and Bacon have decided to return, or they're planning to return for their sophomore years, which will allow Florida State to combine then a really terrific 2016 recruiting class with Trent Forrest and Jonathan Isaac coming in with Bacon and Beasley for really the most talented roster that Florida State will have had in a long time. I mean, Florida State will actually be just above average in terms of ACC rosters with those guys on the roster. I mean, they were a little below average this year once Kofor got hurt, or right at around average in terms of ACC rosters, and really just couldn't quite get over the hump against some of the teams on their own tier. But you throw Isaac out there, you put Forrest out there with those guys, and you've got a little bit more in terms of a scoring presence even than what you had this year. The real question, though, is whether or not they're going to be able to improve defensively. Whether or not Bacon and Beasley, whether or not Isaac and Forrest, whether or not some of these guys are going to be able to come in and play defense more like what a traditional Leonard Hamilton team has played. And, you know, that was the thing that was missing this year. on a team that really could score for the most part. You know, they were able to put the ball in the bucket, but they just were not as efficient defensively, and particularly on the perimeter, they were not able to put pressure on teams the way that they have in the past. And some of that has to do with intensity and effort. Some of it's a youth thing. Leonard Hamilton kept bringing up, you know, the injuries to Kofor and Ojo as really important in terms of lacking rim protection, which means that you can't be quite as aggressive on the outside because you have to protect the interior a bit more. And, you know, their defense is predicated on protecting the interior. But if you're able to protect the rim and protect the interior a good bit, then, you know, you're able to pressure a little bit more or a lot more on the outside and do more defensively, play a more aggressive help defense. But the question is really, I mean, you know what you've got, Nojo. I mean, it's not like you lost a dominant interior player. You didn't lose a dominant defender. You did lose a guy that you have to shoot over and, you know, a guy that takes up a lot of space. Kofor is, you know, the guy that was a real loss. I mean, he's a guy that really mattered in terms of an interior presence. But, you know, honestly, Florida State's just not, they still, in the absence of, you know, picking up, they were not able to ultimately pick up a top center prospect or a top power forward prospect, even really. They just don't have that kind of interior presence. So they're still going to have problems against your UNCs and your Dukes and your teams that are going to have those interior presence players. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens next year. I do think that the way that the contract was structured for Leonard Hamilton, that this is really a put up or shut up year for him. That, you know, from what Wayne McGahee from NOLDigest.com was informed that basically Beasley and Bacon let the athletic department know that they planned to come back as long as Leonard Hamilton was still going to be the coach, which was a big reason why they decided to extend him. You get another year of Bacon and Beasley along with Isaac and Forrest and those guys. So you potentially have a quality year there. But if the year doesn't go a whole lot better than, you know, and I mean a good bit better than what you saw this year, then that winds up being his last year, because there's not a whole lot of reason then, after that to keep him there, because Isaac is going to go pro. He's a one and done anyway. And Bacon and Beasley are not going to stay for their junior years, or most likely they're not. There's no reason for them to stay for their junior years. So at that point, that gives a more natural transition spot for the program than this year. So it's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Florida State basketball moving forward. Just a little bit of reflection on some of the stuff that's filtered down to those of us on the Noel Digest side. Either way, going to be plenty to talk about next week on the podcast. Again, spring practice is about to ramp up, so we're going to have a lot to talk about. We're also going to talk some about some of the NFL stuff that's coming down the pike, whether NFL Combine, and also looking at what to expect from Jameis Winston next year, going into his second year. So we'll talk a little bit about that on the podcast next week. That'll do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just one more reminder. You can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Make sure you tell people about this podcast. Sometimes I will check, you know, a message board or two here and there, and people are saying things that if they were listening to this podcast, they certainly wouldn't be saying. So we need to get more word out here, folks. You can follow me again, like I said, at Doc Staples on Twitter. Follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch more material at Noel Digest and on the Noel Digest premium boards, where I provide some insight as well. Again, already talked about what the next podcasts are going to cover. That's going to do it. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Vsporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.